listening to Outside the Cage with your hosts, Gabriel Owens and Alan Young.
Welcome to Outside the Cage. I'm your host, Gabriel Owens, with my co-host, Alan Young.
Here to talk about
the latest news in mixed martial arts, including the latest UFC card, latest Strike Force news, and a little bit of K-1 from Japan.
I think we should talk about Chael Sonnen a little bit here.
That would be some good news to start with.
He has made the news again, this time, and I have not seen a good description of the exact situation, except that he was apparently convicted of laundering money in Oregon and has been suspended by the UFC until he gets his shit together.
Yes, he was part of a money laundering scam with real estate.
Right.
Which he has pled guilty to. He was kicking back money. He was saying, like, oh, this mortgage needs $60,000 to fix the plumbing. So the mortgage company gave $60,000-something to a plumbing company, which was owned by his mother. And then he kicked back that money to the people buying the house, the long and short of it.
Uh-huh.
So he will be facing, he pled guilty, and he's looking to drop a dime on other people who broke the law. So he's looking at probably 2 years probation and a $10,000 fine. Not guaranteed. The judge could decide to screw him. His maximum penalty is 20 years in prison.
Right.
I don't see that, especially if they're looking to cut a deal with him. The judge will probably go with the prosecution. 9 times out of 10, that's what happens. But he has also been, right now he's suspended by the UFC. He was supposed to have a fight in March or April with Sexyama, and that's off the table now. So, and definitely off the table, whatever glimmer of hope he might have hosted Tough with Vanderlei.
Right. So that guy seems like a real winner.
Hey, Republicans, what can you do?
Hey.
Bunch of cheaters and scammers.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I can say.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I love Chael, and it's kind of a shame. You know, he really broke out of the spotlight. He came into the spotlight, broke out of the background last year, and very entertaining.
Right.
And now, you know, steroid accusations, and followed by pleading guilty to federal crimes.
that's not good for one's career.
No, it's recoverable. I mean, it's not like he, you know, texted pictures of his junk to a girl or anything. At least yet.
Or, of course, if he does go to prison for 20 years, that pretty much ends his career. But that's probably not going to happen, as you said.
Yeah, that would be over. He could join, you know, maybe they could put him in the same prison with Lee Murray. but that's off the table. Speaking of Tough, we'll go into latest rumors. They're still not finalized, but it seems closer and closer that the likelihood of it might be Frank Mir and Brock Lesnar.
Interesting.
Yeah, at least Frank is saying as much on his Twitter.
Yeah.
That he believes it's close. But then Dave Meltzer reported in this week's Observer that Brock and Dana actually haven't even spoken since the fight. So.
Well, I saw that Uriah Faber has a fight scheduled. So he's probably not going to be the coach.
Right. And the thing that breaks it up is, like, Muir and Brendan Schaub are supposed to fight, and now that's been pulled. So that would lean towards they have at least Muir being a coach.
Right.
Now, if it's not Brock, why would anyone care?
Right.
I can't think of anyone. Staying in the heavyweight news, Cain Velasquez is out probably the rest of next year.
Wow, that bad. Last I saw was 6 months.
6 to 7 months. Well, that's just till he can actually train again, and then it'd be take 3 or 4 months for a...
So he
might fight on, like, the New Year's card.
Yeah.
Unless he, you know, there's hope he heals faster, and, you know, it's only a four-month rehabilitation before he can train.
Yeah.
But still, he's not fighting till late in the year, or most likely beginning of next year at this point.
That's a shame. Think they'll go for a interim title or just put it on hold?
Well, if it's that long, I can't see. I'd say I have to do an interim title. Mm-hmm. Junior Dos Santos is owed a fight. You know, he's not going to wait a year.
Right.
You know, put an interim fight with him and somebody. So, but all this is up in the air. You know, if Brock and Amir are coaching tough, you know, give Schaub and Shane Carwin's out too. You know, I did my year. We might get into these later. I did my year predictions. Who would hold the belt at the end of 2011? I actually had Shane Carwin as being the champ. I figured he would fight Kane sometime this year, and he'd pull one of his, knock some guy out in the first round. And I thought that would happen and kind of shock the world. And I'm pretty sure that prediction is already dead. So, but going on other heavyweight news, Strikeforce is now smelling roses because they have an 8-man heavyweight tournament with the biggest heavyweights that aren't in UFC.
Right.
You've seen that's starting next month. Alistair Overeem just coming off a win over Todd Duffy. And we have Sergey Konatov, Andrei Arlovsky, Brett Rogers, Verdun, Fedor, Bigfoot. Is that eight?
I wasn't counting. I haven't seen the lineup.
I can hear you typing away like a maniac.
I'm looking. Let's see if I can... Okay, Strikeforce heavyweight tournament officially set with 4 bouts. Okay, let's look at that.
Google's great.
Fedor Emelianenko, Antonio Silva, Josh Barnett, Fabricio Villarreal.
Josh Barnett, that's what I forgot. Okay.
Sergey Karatsinov. Thank you. Andrei Arlovsky, Brett Rogers, and Alistair Overeem. So, yeah, that's pretty darn interesting.
It's a stack. That's a stack tournament. I said that's pretty much everyone who's not in the UFC, heavyweight-wise.
Yeah. That's not bad at all.
So I think the odd man out of that tournament would have to be Brett Rogers, probably almost definitely your first round victim. Who's Andre?
I don't know. I could see him going to the second round.
He's up against Barnett, I think. I don't think he really
is. Yeah. Okay, maybe not.
Fedor's like up against Bigfoot. Smart money would be Fedor wins that, but who knows at this point. So I'm going off the top of my head here. I think Sergey Konatov and Andrei Arlovsky, that is Andre's fight to lose, but Andre seems to lose those fights very often lately.
Right.
And so that would leave, who do we not just mention?
Verdun.
Overeem and Verdun?
So how does the title figure into this, or is the title off the table?
No, whenever the champion fight, which is Overeem, the title will be on the line. So, apparently, so the title should move up in the tournament.
Right. So the victor of the tournament is the champion, which makes sense.
That's a good way to do it. Pride always has a thing where, you know, if the champion was in whatever tournament they had going on, the title wasn't on the line. It's kind of bullshit. And, you know, I mean, unless it was open weight, you know, obviously that doesn't make sense. But
right.
So it's a good, I really enjoy it. You know, it's exciting heavyweight action. Overeem has a chance to prove he's not a paper champion who just fights a bunch of cans, which he kind of has. You know, we have a lot of fights in this tournament that are guys who've already fought with each other. You know, Brett Rogers has beaten Arlovsky, but has lost to Overeem and Fedor. Fedor has lost to Verdum. Arlovsky has beat Verdum. Probably some more in there I don't remember, but there's a lot of these guys have faced each other before. So, But yeah, Fedor wins this. You know, that's, you know, he reclaims that one loss he has on his record, and you know, Overeem wins it. He's kind of proven, you know, like I said, he proved himself not a paper champion. And
right,
Barnett comes back. You know, Barnett or Orlovsky come back from obscurity, and more dark horse wise, you know, Verdum proves, you know, the Fedor win wasn't a fluke. I really don't see Sergey or Brett Rogers winning this, so I'm not even going to speak. I mean, either one of those win, that would be, you know, more amazing than anything else. But
right,
those are two. Those are definitely the two cans, if you will, in the tournament. Not that Sergey is much of a slouch, but Brett Rogers, yeah, I don't think he. Brett Rogers is living off beating Andrei Arlovsky once, pretty much.
Well, he had a good run going.
That was his run. He beat Andrei Arlovsky.
Wasn't there more of a run than that?
I as big names go, I don't think so.
Well, I didn't say big names.
Oh yeah, yeah, he'd beaten people before that, but they weren't anybody of note.
Well, no.
But he lost to Fedor, and then he got completely manhandled by Overeem.
Right.
Anyway, it's definitely looking forward to that. Other non-UFC 125 news, the K1 Dynamite show was this New Year's Eve. Did you happen to watch it?
I did not. I saw the fight between Overeem and the guy that he mauled.
Todd Duffy.
Todd Duffy, there we go. That was a quick affair, which brings me to a quick point I wanted to make about Dream, is that it was only just a couple of days before the fight that they decided that there was going to be a title on the line for that fight, which, you know, an interim
title for a title that never existed.
Yeah, that too. So, how does that make sense?
It doesn't, but at the same time, you do give Overeem now has three titles. He is the Dream, K1, and Strikeforce heavyweight champion.
Right.
So he has three paper belts, essentially. He can make some origami.
He'll hold his pants up.
Yeah, the if you watch the entire show start to finish, it was 4.5 hours, which is typical of a Japanese New Year show.
Right.
Side note, I watched the other Japanese New Year show obviously on a tape delay with my wife. And yeah, those things are long.
Which Japanese New Year show?
The one that doesn't have fighting in it. It's like a lot of people singing.
Oh. Well, that sounds boring.
Well, my wife hated it. She was like, this is, you know, she hadn't watched, I don't think she's watched it in 9 years. You know, we're paying a lot of money for this Japanese channel because they show Japanese kids show, so my kid can watch. So she recorded this, and it was like 4.5 friggin' hours. Japan is big on, you know, if you're not between 18 and 25, you're staying at home on New Year's. Like, New Year's is a big stay-at-home event, you know, other than the young demographic. You know, they do go out. I know that for a fact. I've seen them. I've been in Tokyo on New Year's Eve.
Mm.
But everyone else, you know, the majority of the country stays home and watches TV. It's a big thing. So, you know, it's like the biggest rating getter of the year. MMA, kickboxing, combat sports has always had a huge rating share.
Yeah.
Traditionally, it's last 3 or 4 years, it's really gone off the hand. It's really gone down, you know, especially this year. They absolutely had no one of name value that anyone cared about. There was no Bob Sapp. There was no, you know, big name Japanese fight. I mean, Sakuraba, you know, who even by Japan standards, no one cares about anymore because he's, you know, basically one punch away from being permanently brain damaged, I think.
Apparently his ear exploded in this.
Not explode. It almost got ripped off. He almost pulled a Mick Foley. I know you don't know who that is, but there was a wrestler by the name. You ever heard of Cactus Jack Mankind? That guy.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, he got his ear ripped off in a wrestling match in Germany. Got caught up in the ropes and yanked his ear off. This is never got it back on either because he couldn't say formaldehyde in German apparently, and they threw it away.
Oh,
yeah. So, yeah, he still has a giant hole in the side of his head to this day. So it was kind of similar to that, except, you know, at least Sakuraba's ear didn't completely come off the cartilage and they could sew it back on.
Ugh. And, so, I mean, I thought I read that it was just punched too much. And
oh, no. It was hanging on by a bit of cartilage. It was, like, almost off.
Well, what caught it? What caused it to rip?
I'm not sure. I haven't seen the car. I've only seen the heavyweight fight. I watched that online. So
yeah.
I've been meaning to watch the Sakuraba fight to see what happened. But I've seen the pictures, and you can, you know, see daylight coming through this crescent moon in his ear. Yeah, it was bad. Mick Foley did not have, you know, Mick Foley's is totally a fluke because, you know, being, you know, a fake fighter, his ears weren't completely calcified.
Right.
As anyone who's ever seen Sakuraba, his ears are just giant molds of cauliflower. So that happens when your ears get that bad. They will bleed easy and kind of start to fall off your head.
So, yeah.
So you young amateur wrestlers out there, wear your damn headgear. And you young Brazilian jiu-jitsu guys, screw them if they make fun of you at the gym. Put the damn headgear on. The level of chicks turned on by the busted up ear fetish is very, very small. anything else going on besides the elephant in the room we're missing right now, which is the last UFC card?
Nothing I'm aware of.
So we talked about Tough, who's not getting a fight, who is. So, let's take us to UFC 125. I'm going down by fight, so I'm going to, fights we didn't see, Jacob Volkman versus Antonio McKee, apparently a horrible fight. It was the opener. It sucked. Everyone hated it. Fight that did air, Ninja Roberts versus Greg Soto. They showed it right at the end of the telecast.
I don't remember seeing that.
Big, lanky black guy got a Kimura, almost warped the guy's arm off.
Yeah, that sounds vaguely familiar.
That was a fun little fight. Ninja Roberts, the lanky black man in question, is one of those guys the scouts are saying is a good up-and-comer. He's 12-1. It was a very he put on the Kimura with a frightening speed from a bad position, got in good position, and about tore the guy's shoulder off. So it was an exciting little 4-minute battle. Another fight we did not see: former featherweight champion of WC Mike Brown lost to Diego Nunes via I think split decision.
It was split decision, yes.
Mike Brown not looking good. His big moment in fame might be just beating Faber. He hasn't recovered, done anything since. And according to everyone who saw it, Nunez, one of his eyes was closed for most of the fight, and he could not capitalize on having a half-blind opponent. And it was all standing.
Brings into question, I wonder as to the real depth of talent in the featherweight division.
It's a matter of no one knows who's there yet. That was like the story of WC. They're like, they thought they had the best, and they just keep bringing in people, and like UFC, old WC just didn't know. They just see fights, and you know, it wasn't developed at a national level yet. It's still not. It's going to be another 3 or 4 years, I think, before we really, really, really know who are the best bantamweight and featherweights. You're going to see a lot of title changes, I think. But
Was this Nunes's UFC/WBC?
I don't recognize the name. It could be his record's 16-1. So sure. He had a great record. So I mean he.
Yeah.
It wasn't like he was a complete underdog, but again, his former champion, and Mike Brown looked unbeatable at one point, but we've learned since people have figured out his game.
Yeah. So.
But again, we didn't watch the fight, so we shouldn't talk too much about it.
Okay.
First fight, did you watch the Ion fights?
I did. Okay, well, Brad Tavares versus Phil Baroni.
It was just shown twice on the Ion, and they replayed it on the pay-per-view. Baroni looked great walking out and putting on his sunglasses.
He always does.
A lot of people have said, you know, he needs to go into pro wrestling. I agree that the guy would be an awesome pro wrestler. Misses calling, possibly. And he's talked about doing it. He grew up a fan. Obviously, he has Ric Flair robes. He's only 34. I mean, if he's going to give up fighting, you know, now's the time. You know, before he's 40, and he wouldn't have a career. Right. He couldn't have a career either.
Right.
Said the guy's got great charisma. He apparently was the second most popular fighter on the card after Clay Guida, which is amazing since he was on a buried undercard fight. So, dude has charisma. You know, he has legit fighting skill. WWE should just freaking sign him, train him up.
Yeah.
Great fighter.
Yeah.
But go ahead. What was your take on this fight?
Phil Baroni started out strong and then got knocked out. That's really all there is to it.
I thought you were going a little longer. I was going to get up and get a drink. So keep talking.
It's a good thing we have editing because I really had nothing else to say. I could read someone else's review.
Way to think on your feet there, Alan. No, we don't have edit. We don't have editing. It's me this time, so.
Oh.
My editing is going to be adding in goofy pictures on the video. Because I figured out how to turn these into videos and add pictures, but I still haven't figured out how to. Because, you know, I'm used to real editing programs, software, which I don't have. Oh. And I can't figure out how to change my timeline on this little VOD thing, so I'm not going to bother. I'm just going to add funny pictures. And let Brian, I guess, could do it, but he's lazy. I don't think he really listens to these shows. Last couple of descriptions were like, latest news in UFC. Wow. Amazing descriptions. So if Brian's really listening, he can insert his 2 cents right now.
That was an excellent maneuver on the part of Gabriel Owens.
Yes, they are amazing descriptions. Thank you very much. Yes, I do listen. And this is the source for the latest news in UFC. Really, what else is there but UFC? I mean, I don't watch wrestling anymore. UFC's buying everybody, aren't they? I can't tell the difference between, like, triangle hold and, you know, vertical hold.
Okay. We'll see how that goes. Our next fight was Dustin Poirier versus Josh Grisby, the guy who was supposed to get a shot at Jose Aldo. Not Jose.
Right.
It is Jose. Brazilians cannot pronounce anything right, apparently.
Jose and the Pussycats.
Yeah, he's apparently Ralph becomes Half, Roger becomes Hodger, and Jose becomes Josie. I don't know. I don't speak Portuguese. You know, whatever. I'm sure our names sound ridiculous also. And I know Gabriel's probably pronounced some weird thing in Portuguese. And what do you think? Maybe Alan? Alain? Alain?
Sure, why not?
Sounds good. But thank God. For Josh Grisby's health, thank God he did not get a shot at Jose.
Yeah. It was pretty much a lopsided victory, as I recall. And I must admit that I didn't take any notes, and my memory is slightly fuzzy of the night. So,
he got beat up on the feet the entire fight. He could not take it to the ground.
Right.
Dustin Poirier is good, but he's not Jose Aldo good. Jose Aldo was beating him up on the feet. Probably wouldn't have lasted this long. It wouldn't have gone to a decision.
Right.
Jose probably would have destroyed
taken his head off in the first round.
Yeah. Or unless he wanted to play with him and just kicked him in the leg for 15 minutes.
God.
How much can I kick this guy before he can't stand? But it was. He did not look good. They always say, you know, like you lose. You know, it's a risk taking a fight when you're supposed to get a title fight. You should wait. I disagree. No, if you don't win the fight between your guaranteed title shot, you didn't deserve the title shot because you just lost.
Yeah, pretty much.
So maybe Dustin Poirier will be the next guy on Jose Aldo's hit list.
And as a side note, his nickname, Dustin Poirier, is Dustin the Diamond, Poirier.
Yes. A lot of people pointed this out. You mentioned it on Twitter, I saw.
Is that indeed a Screech reference?
As far as anyone can tell, yes.
That's pretty funny.
A lot of people have noticed that. He is Dustin the Diamond, which is, I don't know.
Dustin Diamond being the actor who portrayed Screech on Saved by the Bell.
He's also an incredible dick, but also a martial artist, so don't go up and fuck with him. Just let me know.
Dustin Diamond?
Yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah. He's like a something degree black belt. He did like all those like celebrity boxing, and he just like whoops everyone's ass. Like, he has like legit skill.
Huh.
But he is a complete dick also, so.
Huh. I had no idea. I just kind of disappeared after his childhood acting career.
Nah, he did celebrity boxing. He also did Hulk Hogan's Celebrity Pro Wrestling, where he was also a complete dick. But anyway.
All right.
Next fight, Jeremy the Heathen Stevens versus Marcus Davis. This was Marcus's fight to lose by the third round, and he did.
Congratulations, you've lost.
Way to throw it away by being sloppy by thinking you're ahead. Just because you're ahead on the cards doesn't make you. I don't know if maybe being ahead on the cards makes you think like the other guy lost his punching power, but Heathen Stevens is known for being really heavy-handed,
and he did. He landed one.
He got him good. It was bad, actually. Marcus Davis uses superior boxing and footwork and took him apart in the first two rounds, and for some reason, the second round, he decided to get fancy and maybe a little tired. I don't know. If he was tired, he should have been more defensive and rode out the win. But he decided to try to keep it exciting, and it was dumb. He got knocked down on his feet and got one on the ground for good measure.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people complained about that, but I remember the fight. Davis was kind of still slightly awake on the ground, and the ref hadn't jumped on them yet. So
yeah, well, you know, I don't blame the guy for waiting until the ref jumped in. That's
the game.
That's what the ref is there for. Yeah, I mean, there have been cases where the fighter knocked the other guy down and he hesitated and it hurt him. So
yeah, you can't. I mean, but some people complain, it's like, you know, it's not gentlemanly. It's like the guy's going to go until he goes. It's just, that's the way the sport's going to be. There are a few guys who have done it, and you know, they were right, and it looked good on them.
Yeah,
but if I'm your coach, I would never tell you to that. I'm like, you know, sorry for that guy, but you know, you never know. You know, you hesitate, and all of a sudden, he flash recovers, and the fight's back on.
Right.
Don't do it. I would never tell anyone to do it. Just
right.
I mean, as soon as the ref touches you, obviously stop.
Right.
But yeah, he did the right thing. It was a nasty knockout. Excuse me. Not as bad as the Baroni one, where he was still. He was doing the old spot.
He was grabbing the ref's leg.
Yeah, I love that spot. That's like a pro wrestling spot at this point, you know. Where you grab the ref's leg because you're so out of it. So, one of my favorites.
So while we're on the subject of the prelims, you'd mentioned Ion. The Ion Network. Dana said that he would get the UFC on broadcast TV, and he technically succeeded.
Technically, yeah. That's a
on a network that's in hundreds of millions of homes, but nobody watches because it's nothing but infomercials and reruns.
Yeah, and not only that, it was they had it on like not even a week. It wasn't even announced a week before it was on, so they had no time to promote it either. So
right.
Ooh, one of my cats just took a shit. I can smell it through the whole house.
Cool.
Thought everyone should know that. So, yeah, it was, I don't know if, I know, well, you're on satellite, so maybe you get it in HD. Cox?
No, it was in SD.
Yeah, Cox in San Diego does not carry it in HD either, so. And it was a horrible SD broadcast, too. It did not look good.
Yeah. I looked it up on Wikipedia. Apparently, Ion doesn't even broadcast in HD.
They do. I've heard people say that there are some places they carry it in HD.
Oh, are there?
Apparently. Hmm. They don't. Not here. You know, I looked up on their Ion network and like typed in, you know, as a thing like find your channel. You know, you type in, you know, your city, You type in your zip code in your carrier, and they give you the channels, and yeah, they only gave me the one SD. I'm like, fine, whatever, you know, at least I'm watching, I can watch this one on my SD TV, on my HD TV, which will make it look a little better. It looked no better than if I'd watched it in my back room, where I unfortunately have to watch the pay-per-views. Because I kind of bitched about my TiVo issue, my one issue with TiVo, but yeah, the story for another day. One day I'll figure it out. I'll figure out some way to watch my pay-per-views in HD, but I haven't figured it out yet. If any of you listeners out there know a way, my email is recharge138@gmail.com.
You're going to get 75 angry letters now.
Sweet. Wait, that's bkilby@gmail.com.
Okay, so on to the main card.
Yes. Clay, the amazingly weird, hunched over caveman Guida versus Takanomi. What the fuck is this guy doing, Gomi?
Exactly. And from all appearances, it looked like Gomi just got tired by watching Guida.
Yeah, he's just like, his eye is moving back and forth so quickly. I'm just like, I'm exhausted. What the hell is he doing?
Exactly.
Amazing game plan by Clay. Work for him. First round was maybe the most boring Clay Guida round I've ever seen. Only he could get away with being boring because everyone loves him so much.
Yeah.
But even the crowds kind of gave a half-hearted boo, like by minute four, just like, all right, Clay, we love you, but what the fuck are you doing, man?
Yeah.
But it paid off in dividends in the second round. He came back, got the takedown. Gomi's weakness has always been submissions. We saw that with the Nick Diaz fight and a few and a BJ Penn. But yeah, I don't even hold it against Gomi. I think he was just confused. He was like, I don't know what's going on, man.
He was hypnotized by the bouncing hair.
Just, you know, notes for Clay in the future. That's not going to work on everybody. BJ Penn will knock your sorry ass out for trying that shit.
That's true.
But anyway, it was by the second round, it was exciting. He nearly tore his head off with the guillotine choke. He quoted the Big Lebowski in his post-fight interview and looked awesome, and everyone loved him, and it was a great interview. Another guy, if he ever left MMA, would be a great pro wrestler personality. Just
right.
Just an amazing guy. Speaking of, some people have pointed out, he looks like he looks like a young Dave Meltzer back when he had long hair. Someone has posted a picture of them side by side. It is uncanny.
Okay.
Like Paul Heyman, of all people, posted it. So I know these are people you know about, but it's still fine.
I think it looks like Captain Caveman myself. But
yeah, he's very cavemanish. I won't deny that.
Going to come out in the ring and start beating people with a club.
That'd be awesome. He should come in the ring with a cave and a he should make a loincloth set of shorts.
Here we go, and walk out with a club over his shoulder.
I would be all for that. I've always said we need more pro wrestling type entrances in MMA.
Yes.
I guess we go on to the next fight. Great grappling battle if you're into grappling. I know some UFC fans are all about the stand-up, but screw you, go watch K1. Dong-hyun Kim, the stun gun, versus Nate Diaz. This was almost all on the ground. It was a very exciting ground battle. Dong-hyun Kim shut down Nate Diaz's bottom game jiu-jitsu very impressively. Got the takedowns. Nate Diaz could not use his reach because actually he didn't have a lot of reach on Dion. He is a rare guy he was up against that almost matched him in reach.
Right.
To me, that was the deciding factor of the fight. Nate couldn't keep his distance as he normally would because he got his reach kind of nullified, and then he got his ground game beaten by a judoka, you know, who aren't slouches at submissions either.
And to his credit, Diaz was working the whole time from the bottom, trying to grab submissions, just couldn't do it.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Diaz does.
He's a Diaz brother. That's how they roll, yo.
Right.
He did take the third round. He completely neutralized him on the ground and beat him up standing. Jeong got tired, so you know. Too little too late, though. He lost the first two rounds. But he was trying, as opposed to our next fight. he was trying on the ground as opposed to another certain person.
Yes.
But anyway, I just Did this a little bit more on Young Hum Kim, called Help GSP. You know, good luck with that, buddy. I don't think you're quite there, but
not quite yet. Needs at least one more fight against us.
I'd say two, and yeah, he kind of came off like an asshole the whole fight. So he's got a good like bad guy heel reputation going for him.
Mm-hmm.
Which is funny going up against Nate Diaz. You look like the bad guy. It takes a lot. So I think Dave Meltzer, going back to Dave Meltzer again, he compared him to a 70s foreign heel, which I think is very appropriate. Especially with his manager came out and they're both kind of dicks.
Well, Nate isn't as dickish as his brother Nick.
I don't think either one. Yeah, they're just crazy. It's like, you know, you have to love or hate those guys, but they're not trying to be assholes. They're just angry at everything and everyone.
Yeah, but I don't think Nate is quite as much so as Nick. He seems to be more mellow.
You know, that's like there's a big level of comparison there.
Yeah.
More level than Nick Diaz is not saying a whole lot. But he is. Yeah, you're right. But speaking of people who don't do anything on the fucking ground, we have Brandon the Truth Vera, who took on Tiago Silva.
Man.
Supposed to be both of their comeback fights. It was one guy's comeback fight.
This was. I felt embarrassed for Brandon Vera.
I thought he was a fucking idiot. He did absolutely nothing on the ground. I never saw him do one thing other than vaguely defend. No sweeps, no bucking, no throwing up submissions, nothing. This was just a guy laying there who was like
taking it like a corpse.
Like, hopefully the ref will stand us up, because he was winning the stand-up every time they start the round.
Yeah.
He beat Tiago with Muay Thai. He was beating him up. All he had to do was take him down, and once Tiago realized, once he had him on the ground, he wasn't doing anything, he started clowning the hell out of him.
Yeah, and by the third round, he was playing the bongos on Vera's back.
That was awesome. He was slapping him around like he was his bitch, which he was.
Yeah, just bitch slapping him from his back.
And he still didn't do nothing.
No.
But that would piss me off, even if it was Tiago Silva on my back, which, granted, is, you know.
One of your fantasies.
My life's in a lot of trouble. Well, no, my life's in a lot of trouble at that point. But I would do something. If someone started bitch slapping me, I would, you know, at least, you know, like, well, maybe I'm about to get my ass knocked out. But I would try to do something to the guy.
Yeah.
Now I'm being embarrassed. Nothing.
Right.
And somehow on the bitch slapping exchanges, he got his nose. You know, they always
horribly mutilated.
They always say the thing like his face got rearranged. No, you don't understand. This guy literally got his face rearranged. His nose was around his ear, I think.
Yes, that's about right. Yeah, that's probably the worst broken nose I've ever seen in the octagon.
Worse than Rich Franklin against Silva.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
That was like the only redeeming part of like Brandon Vera's kind of making, you know, his little goofy jumping around, you know, hiding his nose from the camera. You know, that was funny. I at least enjoyed that.
He pulled the cap down over his nose at the end of the fight.
But yeah, he lost 2 30-27s and 1 30-26. So some judge gave one of those rounds a 10-8.
Yeah.
Maybe he saw maybe after the third round he saw him getting bitch slapped around. He's like, yeah, this guy's getting a 10-8.
Yeah.
So
I'm surprised that I haven't seen a story about Vera getting bumped from the UFC yet.
Everyone was expecting that. They have not made that decision. I don't know why. You know, the guy needs to leave and go, you know, figure something out on the indie. He doesn't even need to go to Strikeforce. He needs to go to the indies and build himself back up, because he's... I think even Strikeforce at this point might be too much for him.
But I think Strikeforce would probably give him an offer, though.
They will. I don't know. Coker's a little tight with money. I mean, he's got shit going on. He's tight with money. I'd just say go to the indies for just one or two fights. Just go to the indies.
Yeah.
Win impressively two times against decent competition, and then check out Strikeforce or UFC. Say, hey. Yeah. But right now, he's not living up to his potential, and this is literally a guy who is way more talented than he's been fighting in the last 2 years. It's frustrating for me because I was a huge fan when he first came out. The guy beat Frank Mir, for Christ's sake. A top-level heavyweight in a weight class above his normal weight.
Mm-hmm.
Beat Asuerio Silva, who was a pretty game heavyweight in the back in his day. The guy was talented. The guy is talented. He just
hadn't lived up to it.
I don't know what happened. Yeah, I don't know what happened to him. Hello.
So the next fight.
Yes, we had
Brian Stan versus Chris Lieben, former WEC light heavyweight champ. Brian Stan moved down to middleweight to fight the always game Chris Lieben.
Chris Lieben coming off a great year, 2010, three straight wins.
Yeah, within 2 weeks.
Yeah, and two high-level opponents, Aaron Simpson and Sexyama.
Right.
Brian Stan threatened to stand and play the dirty boxing zombie game with Lieben, and he fulfilled it. Lieben accused him of having weak punches and talking a bunch of shit that he was going to stand, and then he would immediately try to take it to the ground. Lieben is the one who tried to take it to the ground, so. Ha-ha. But Lieben rose like a zombie three times in the fight, but it took the magic sword three times to put him down, just like a good video game. And it was a coming out party for Brian Stan.
Yeah, he looked good, and
looked better. It's the best he's ever looked.
Yeah. So good for him. We'll see him again. He called out Vanderlei.
That's the third guy who has called out Vanderlei.
People keep calling out Vanderlei. Where's Vanderlei?
He pretty much had to take the year off.
Injury of some sort?
Facial reconstruction.
Oh.
I think he had some other surgeries done, but yeah, he was just, he took a long time. He had a lot of scar tissue and fucked up facial shit going on. Did you see they showed him on TV. He looked like a different guy.
I don't remember that.
Are you drinking?
A little.
Okay. Oh, it's so weird on the show. Like, you come off as the alcoholic.
Yeah.
Just for the record, folks, he pretty much only drinks at these things. I use it.
Pretty much, yes.
I'm the one who drinks on a regular basis.
Only when I have company.
Yeah. And I drink on a regular basis, so, but...
You're probably drunk right now, aren't you?
I'm actually sober.
No. So...
It is only 4:30 over on the West Coast.
Okay. So that brings us to the main event... Frankie Edgar defending his light heavyweight, or his lightweight belt, rather, against the one man who beat him, Gray Maynard. And it was a hell of a fight. Maynard knocked down Edgar in the first round and continued to pounce on him, wouldn't let him up. Edgar was barely defending, basically... lost in the first round, and at any point the fight could have been stopped, but the ref let it go, and first round was at least 10-8 for Maynard,
which all three judges gave it to him 10-8.
Right.
Kind of surprising, really. There's always one judge who just will never... There's always a judge who will never say a round was a 10-8, no matter how bad the beating was. But this right. was... They all realized, like, no, this was a 10-8 round. Maybe a more open judge would have gave it a 10-7.
Yeah.
I would have not been upset with a 10-7 on that
one. No, it was very lopsided. But in between rounds, Edgar recovered very well. And... the next three rounds were pretty much a stand-up battle.
No. Round four was Edgar taking the better wrestler down.
Oh, was it?
Round four was Edgar had three takedowns.
Oh,
the way that. I scored it, was, yeah, Edgar came back. He won. You know, he basically won the second round stand-up, surprisingly, especially after being rocked. Round three. Maynard, it was kind of even on the feet. Maynard edged him out and then had the takedown at the end. Just kind of stole the round for him. Round four was totally Edgar's. He won on the feet. He won. He had three takedowns. Totally his round. And then round five was very, very close.
Right.
So if you gave a 10-8 for Maynard in the first round and gave him the third round, which I did, and you gave Edgar the other three rounds, it was a 47-47, which is how I scored it.
Yeah, that's how I would have scored it, too. And one judge also scored it that way, apparently, with a 47-47.
Yeah, we won 47-47. We had one for Maynard. We had one for Egger.
Right. 46-48, 48-46. So evened out to a very interesting draw.
And not what people are pissed about. Everyone's pretty fine with it, because I think a lot of people kind of pulled in the draw. You know, most draws get a lot of crap. They're like, what are these judges watching?
Right.
That was the right call.
I agree.
The only problem with this is now we end up with, you know, Pettis was promised a title shot after his ninja kick heard around the world.
Right.
And now
he is now on hold until the immediate rematch between Edgar and Maynard is decided.
And you got to wonder if Pettis is going to just sit on the sidelines in the wing, so to speak, and wait for it, or he's going to risk it and take a fight.
Yeah.
Because again, if you take a fight and lose, hey, maybe you shouldn't be challenging for the title.
Right.
So, I don't know, it sucks for Pettis because he has a lot of momentum. You know, he's very well known right now for that kick. You know, him fighting in April, I think, is better than him fighting in August, September-ish. But at least for the title, you know, I said Pettis might be game, and you know, probably is game. You know, these guys are ridiculously competitive people. And just say, no, hey, give me, you know, Donald Cerrone, give me another top 155-er.
Right.
So, you know, I would kind of want him to see fight one more guy. If he fights a top, you know, a very legit UFC 155-er and wins, then he definitely should get the winner of, you know, there should be no doubt at that point he deserves a title shot.
Right. So is this the first time that there has ever been a draw in title fight in the UFC?
No, Cal Uno and BJ Penn.
Ah.
Which actually killed the lightweight title for about 3 years. Because it was, the story was, speaking of, I talk about this for just a bit before we get off the air. Yeah, Jens Pulver was the lightweight champion. BJ Penn was very inexperienced in the sport, coming off, you know, being the only non-Brazilian to ever win the Mundials, Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt. Came in the UFC, he had like one prior fight, you know, won like three straight, fought Jens, lost Jens, he wasn't ready for it. Jens essentially left UFC trying to find more money. Back then, UFC was like, you know, wasn't making a lot.
Right.
So they had, since he vacated the title, basically, they had an interim fight, or a vacated title fight between him and Cal Uno, who BJ already beaten in one round, but in their rematch, went full five rounds and ended up being a draw. So,
no title was awarded.
No title was awarded, and the title was completely dropped for like 3 years.
So in this case, Edgar retains the title, although I'm sure it seems a little hollow to him.
He threw the belt down in the ring after the result got read. Dana tried to put it on him, and he threw it down. He did not notice that. Both of them were very objected. But then again, they didn't get their money at that point. So, sure, after they both got awarded their win bonuses and fight of the night bonuses.
Right.
They might have cheered up.
Probably a bit, yeah.
My guess. But, yeah, they're going to rematch. Initially, they said no, Pettis gets a shot. Then Dana had a change of heart and said, no, we're going to do.
Right.
We'll do the rematch.
The rematch.
I don't have a problem either way.
Yeah.
A lot of people do. I was like, I understand. He's like, hey, you know, Maynard had a shot. He didn't beat the champ.
Right.
He goes back to the end of the line. But that's not how Dana operates, you know. He says he wants to see a winner. He's the boss. That's what's going to happen.
Right.
No problem. Just hopefully Pettis. I want to see Pettis get that title shot at some point. So hopefully he does take another fight, wins decisively against a major 155-er. Maybe Ken Florian. I know he's on knee surgery. I actually think he's out with knee problems, but he'd be a great name. He's a great gatekeeper. He's become like the gatekeeper at this point. So.
Pretty much, since he can beat almost everyone except the title holder.
And he's lost two title fights. I mean, I would love to see Ken Flo have one more title fight just to be like the only guy who's ever challenged three times for the title and never won. just to have that thing on his record, you know?
Yeah.
That'll do it for the card. Like I said, we get, but obviously we just said they Maynard and Edgar got best fight bonus. Who got best submission? I think Guida got best submission. And best knockout was, I think, the Davis knockout. Hello?
Hello.
Oh, okay.
I'm here. I just had nothing to interject.
Okay, I just going off the top of my head who got the bonuses.
Yeah, I don't recall.
Oh, there was a bit in the Nate Diaz fight, a point where Jong Dong, Stun Gun, let's call him Stun Gun. I'm mangling Korean names here. Nate had him in the clinch. He was standing up, and realizing he was standing up in knee distance, tried to put one of his hands touching the ground, make it a three-point stance, which makes it illegal for knees.
Right. Which, as Joe Rogan pointed out, is a dumb rule anyway. But
it is. Yeah. It's a completely retarded rule.
Yeah. And Nate was reprimanded got a warning for
it was close too. I mean, they showed it a bunch of times. I mean,
Kim's hand came up right as the knee landed, so it's arguable that it was even a foul.
Well, if you look at it by intent, he was throwing the knee while the hand was still down. But
yeah,
if you look at the actual impact, the hand was up.
Right.
So ref's discretion on that. But Nate Diaz has kind of been making complaints about it. He's like, well, the hand was up, I hit the knee. He started rolling around, selling like he'd been shot. You know, it should have been declared a TKO at that point. Which, you know, I guess you can look at it that way. But I look at it like he wouldn't have rolled around acting hurt if it hadn't been stopped for an illegal move. I think he started immediately selling like, oh my God, he hurt me.
Right.
But whatever. It's minor point. But again, another rule that needs to be looked at.
Yeah.
All right, and before we finish this up, I did one thing. We haven't talked about it yet. I just read BJ Penn's book, Why I Fight. Little book review for those. You know, if you hate BJ Penn or like BJ Penn, the book's not going to change your opinion either way. If you think everything he's done has been, you know, legitimate, or, you know, he was in the right, you'll have that justification. If you think he's a whiner who likes to complain and makes up weird things, he's not going to change it. He doesn't really defend either one. Like, he gives props to people who beat him, but at the same time, the way he writes the book kind of puts his little excuses in the phrase while still praising the other guy for winning. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, and he does spend a lot of time pretty much accusing GSP of greasing. So. You know, he hit a bit on Shirk being a steroid cheater, which, you know, is legitimate.
Yeah.
You know, he has a strong opinion about people using steroids and cheating. Fine, he has a right to write that. But the thing about GSP greasing, you know, his big smoking gun was, you know, famously Phil Nurse put Vaseline on his face, didn't completely wipe his hands off before he started massaging his back. Like, that was a sign, like, he's obviously greasing it. There's not enough grease on your hands at that point to make your back sweaty. Not saying absolutely GSP didn't have any other kind of grease thing going on. But the other interesting thing is I didn't realize him and Ken Florian had an issue going into their fight. According to the book, he said Ken Florian had tipped him off about GSP being a greaser and then later denied ever saying anything.
Huh.
Coincidentally, right as Ken Florian was training with GSP. So. Another thing, I never knew he had a big rivalry with the Gracies. That's a one I never realized how I never knew that one, because he originally started training BJJ under a Gracie, and he went to train another camp, and he went out to a jiu-jitsu competition under that camp, and the Gracie, a health, by the way, felt he was a traitor, and the Gracies had it in for him ever since. I never knew that. I don't know how I missed that, but, you know, interesting little story on BJ, but, you know, read the book. It's kind of interesting. It's not, Matt Hughes is still the best MMA book I've ever read. I've not read Jonathan Stone's book yet, but it's interesting, especially if you're interested in anything about BJ Penn. It's an interesting little book to read, especially if you like someone describing blow by blow about their fights. BJ describes like every fight he's ever been in, blow by blow. So you have that going for you.
All right.
Anything else?
No.
All right, I think that wraps it up for us. For Alan Young, I'm Gabriel Owens, and I'll see you outside the cage.
You've been listening to Outside the Cage with your hosts, Gabriel Owens and Alan Young. Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at TF Radio for news and updates. Like the podcast? Leave us feedback on iTunes. Outside the Cage is a Radio Free Cybertron production. Copyright 2010, Radio Free Cybertron.